I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with a Deal, and today our guest is David Bonser, the co-head of the corporate group and head of the REIT group at Hogan Lovells. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here, David. Thanks.
We're going to talk about several things on today's podcast. First of all, your background, and then a little bit about how you got into doing REIT work, the challenges and opportunities in leading that group for many years. And then finally, a little bit about what you do to decompress from work. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the practice.
Sure, David, happy to. I joined Hogan, what was then Hogan and Hartson, now Hogan Lovells, but back then Hogan and Hartson. I was a summer associate out of law school. I started here as a first year. I went to Duke undergrad. I went back to Texas for law school, where I grew up in Dallas, and then came east. I was excited to come to what was then Hogan and Hartson. I was a first year associate. A month into my tenure here was the first stock market crash. It actually was the day I filed an IPO as a first year associate. So that made a very memorable first month in the excitement of all that. And then also wondering whether I was still going to have a job at the end of the month, because it was pretty disastrous back then. Like most younger lawyers, I fell into the real estate world sort of by accident. I was a first year later on. We were doing a deal. There was a young partner named Warren Gurrell who did a deal, a real estate syndication for Marriott. And it was one of their first real estate syndications for a new product they had back then called Residence Inns, which are now everywhere. And I got assigned to that deal. It was a really fun deal to work on. And then I did a few more deals with Warren and others. And then I was, I think, about a fifth year associate, right at the right place, right time, when the REIT IPO boom took off. There was the banker that Warren had worked with on that first deal called and said, I've got an IPO I'd like you to represent us on. It was for a company called Carr Realty Corporation. And I was a fifth year associate, a grueling transaction, but it was one of the first of its kind. It was one of the very first IPOs. And then the whole practice just sort of took off from there. And so it was really a case of being in the right place at the right time, putting forth your best effort at the time. And when things go well, that really can lead to a tremendous opportunity. We got a bunch more IPOs in the door following that. I've had the chance now to work on 20 IPOs over the course of the years. And then when you take these companies public, they do public M&A deals. It really leads to a lot of exciting things, but it really goes back to that single transaction, and doing well on that transaction is how I got to where I am today. A lot by a little bit of accident, but taking advantage of the opportunity.
And how has your practice evolved as the REIT sector has evolved and to some extent matured?
The practice has matured as well, David. It's been interesting. Early on, it was a tremendous amount of IPOs. Everybody wanted in this industry. Everybody wanted in this space. We had law firms coming in from everywhere. Oh, you know, REITs look like that's where it's at. Let's jump in. We were on the ground floor, so we were able to get a leadership position early on, and fortunately have hung on to that. But the industry matured over time. There aren't really many IPOs anymore, a couple here and there a year, but not many. And so the industry has matured, and now it's much of a public M&A, special committee assignments, you know, big joint venture transactions for our public company clients. And then also, interestingly, some of our clients get bought, and then the CEOs start up a private fund, and we work with them on the private side. But it's been a really interesting ride to watch an industry mature. I probably have half a dozen companies that I've taken public, worked with them in the ground floor of the company, and watched them rise and then ultimately sell in a public M&A exit. And that's very rewarding. It's sad at the same time. You've worked with these people sometimes for, you know, 20 years, but you get to see from you are there at the beginning and you're there at the end of a business cycle. It's really unique to be able to do all of that with the same company and be there every step of the way.
So how has your practice changed, and how did you end up accumulating management responsibilities in addition to your practice?
Well, yeah, the practice matured, as we talked about. Warren Gurrell, who was my mentor and who really built this practice initially along with Prentice Fiegels on the tax side, he ultimately became CEO of the firm somewhere in the mid to late 90s, that thrust me into a leadership role for our group because he had other things he needed to deal with, probably earlier than I was ready, but I didn't mess it up too much. But it was one of those things where it happened somewhat organically. It's not like, you know, I said, oh, I want to go be a leader of a group. You know, someone above you gets elevated and you step into the breach and you try to do the best job you can. I started running the group around that point in time, started to learn a lot more about the practice of law than just deals. Management is very different than the lawyer side of doing deals. They're two very different skill sets.
So you mentioned that you came to run the group maybe a little earlier than you might have in a perfect world. Clearly, Warren Gorel thought you were ready. How did that experience affect how you manage in terms of maybe being willing to push someone into a role when you think they're ready, even though they themselves may not be completely sure?
It's a really good question, and it's really a very important part of leadership is understanding the people that you work with and what they're capable of, even though they may not have yet realized they are capable of it. Warren certainly saw something in me and thought that I could lead the group and that I could do a good job of it. And that taught me, and I would say at the time, I wasn't so sure that was the right decision. It's one of those things where he saw in me perhaps something I didn't even see. I have now taken that to when I'm in the role of a leader, whether it's in the REIT group or in the corporate group more generally, is really focusing on the people here who I think have the ability and the potential to lead successfully. It's an art, not a science. You go a little bit with your instinct in terms of how much to put on someone's plate, whether it's leading a transaction where you're trying to put a young partner or a senior associate in a leading role on a transaction where the client may be used to dealing with you, but you know that this associate, that she can do this, and you want to put her in the role to succeed. It takes a little confidence in yourself to be able to push back a little bit to the client to say, no, watch, this will work. And I'm there every step of the way, but she's going to do a great job on this transaction. It is a little bit of an art, not a science, in identifying the people and what they're capable of. I think some people, lawyers, some of them really want their lanes. They want to know the lane they're in. Others want a super highway. They want to be in every lane. And you got to judge the people that you work with and identify where their strengths are. Hopefully make sure you're aware of any weaknesses and work around those. And that's what I learned as a young leader is to know what your weaknesses are, but build on your strengths. And that's what I try to do with some of the younger partners and senior associates.
Having worked in the REIT field almost from its inception, what has kept you engaged in the practice of law as compared to perhaps going to the business side?
You know, I have been in there from the beginning. I think it's been fun to do that. I think my bio says I was into REITs before REITs were cool or something like that. And it's really been a wonderful ride. And that's part of the fun, I think. And that's probably what has kept me in the job at Hogan Lovell all these years is real estate's a fascinating field. It is filled with entrepreneurs. It's filled with business people who really want to do something fantastic. It's not a bunch of paper pushers or people moving up the rung of the corporate ladder, if you will. Real estate folks tend to be way out there sometimes. And so you do actually, as a lawyer for real estate companies, get a lot of business experience because they want you part of their team. They want you in their boardrooms. They want your judgment. They ask you questions. What do you think? That have nothing to do with law. It's because you've worked with them for a number of years. They trust your judgment. They trust that you understand the industry. That's something that we focused on early on is I spend 100% of my time in this industry, which means I know it really, really well. And so in that context, I enjoy what I do. I really like my job. I feel like I'm an advisor. It's not just the legal stuff. It is the business stuff as well. And when there have been, you know, you talked about opportunities to move elsewhere, all of us have opportunities to do something else. I firmly believe that they need to come at the right place and the right time for you to make a move. At the times when some really interesting opportunities presented themselves to me, it happened to be at a time when a really exciting deal had come in the door or a new management role had been offered up to me. And what I had here still seemed more interesting. And I felt like there were more things to do here than going in-house or going on the business side. And in the times when maybe I felt like I'd gotten to a point in my legal career where maybe I might look somewhere else, that just wasn't anything particularly interesting. So it is a little bit of you're moving through your career a little ad hoc. I can't say I've had a great focus of this is what I wanted to do all my life, but it's worked out pretty well. And I still love what I do. And to me, that's the barometer. Do you really like what you're doing? And if so, how do you stay interested and how do you find new challenges to stay where you are and enjoy it?
You mentioned managing younger lawyers who either may want to stay very focused on their practice area to stay in their lane or who want a much broader practice and perspective in the case of REITs on the business. How do you manage those two groups of lawyers differently? And how do you help them if they have opportunities to go in-house, you know, think about what's right for them?
It really has to be done on a person-by-person basis. You cannot manage to a group. You have to manage to people. And it's not necessarily instinctive for lawyers to do that. You do have to actually, to be a good manager, you have to truly care about the team you're working with. And when you do, all of those questions come naturally because I will have had a dialogue with each of these individuals over sometimes many years about what drives them, what motivates them, what are they afraid of, what do they feel good about. When you know someone really, really well, you start to understand what makes them tick. You figure out where they probably need to go that maybe they haven't thought of, and you put them in a role where you feel like they're going to be successful. You don't know. But you feel based on everything you know about them that they're going to do a good job on this transaction. In the situations where somebody, you know, decides to make a move to go in-house, I'm rarely surprised by that. That's usually a function of a number of discussions over the years. And you start to realize that a law firm partner is not for everyone. The job is incredibly demanding. And for some people, they want to do something else. They want to get off the train, if you will. And they want to explore something else. And that's one of the things where I feel like, you know, you're a good leader when you have somebody come to you who wants to talk about their career, and their career may involve not working for you. And in that context, you have to double down and you have to really dig in with the individual and focus on their career. Not what good, you know, there are some situations where people have left where I sure wish they hadn't left, but it was certainly the best move for them. And in that context, you have to understand that, and you can't get upset about what's going to happen to the practice. You need to focus on what's best for them. And in the end, that all comes back. Most of the time they go in-house and they remember how well they were treated, and then they bring you more work. And so it can be a win-win situation when someone decides to go in-house.
What's the, especially recently, what's the piece of management that you've been proudest of, or, you know, an example of a situation where you feel like you've done a really good job as a leader in relating to someone you work with?
I think we've had the benefit of, you know, two really, really large M&A transactions in the last year or so. One was Vici Properties' $17 billion purchase of MGP, another casino REIT. And then that followed on the heels of an even bigger $28 billion deal where we represented Duke Realty when they were selling to Prologis. In both of those situations, we had a younger partner who's been with us her entire career, and making sure to put her in a position to lead those transactions. I certainly could have stepped in and led those, but what I loved was seeing her ability to shine in those transactions and perform well. And I'm there every step of the way for her. But seeing somebody who you knew as a first-year associate, as a partner, a younger partner, really doing a great job, that's one of your prouder moments, I think. If you're really honest about what really makes the job fun, at least for me, it's seeing people that you've invested years of your time with do really, really well. And that was a really proud moment in terms of watching how well the transaction went, how well she ran the transaction. From that standpoint, that's really rewarding.
What would you say your biggest challenge in managing the group has been? And how would you compare COVID to 2008, the financial crisis in 2008?
Yeah, I said that was a softball question because easily the hardest of all my career has been managing a group through COVID. It was really hard after the financial crisis in 2008, but it was a very different dynamic. In 2008 and 2009, frankly, we were worried about, are we about to implode as an economy? And as a law firm, you don't know where things are going to go. And, you know, I've read enough books after that to realize how close we were, in fact, to imploding. And so we weren't wrong to be scared. But back then, you were mostly scared about where the practice was going to go. You had no idea. And so a lot of leading and managing them was, frankly, just calming people's fears, not looking too scared yourself, even if you were a little bit, but trying to sort of lead through a very uncertain time. COVID was very different. COVID, I've told people a lot that it was the hardest time I've ever had to lead and the most important time to lead, because you had people completely, their entire world disrupted, now suddenly trying to run deals. And we were crazy busy through the entire couple of years of COVID. You're suddenly trying to run a deal off of your kitchen table while managing your kids and your spouse who all are at home and the dog and everything else. And you're still working incredibly hard, but you're not, you know, all together down the conference room in a community effort working on the same transaction. You're just sitting at your kitchen table late at night. That's hard. It's really demanding. I had a CEO client in a board meeting in the middle of COVID. He said it really well. He said, right now, the culture bank is only taking withdrawals, no deposits. And we were really lucky that we had a really big bank account from a culture standpoint at Hogan Lovells. If we didn't, boy, it would have been really, really, really hard. It was hard enough for us because we do depend on our culture. You know, people work really hard here. Part of why you work here is because you get to be around some really smart people and really fun people, people you actually like working with. That all evaporated because you're on your own. And yeah, you're on Zoom and you're doing conference calls, but it's not the same. And so it was incredibly hard. You became a little bit more of a counselor, which, you know, no lawyers train for that, to help manage people who are really sort of in many cases at points in time, right on the edge, because the family life is overwhelming. The work is overwhelming. We didn't ever see that. You know, lots of times in the old days, you come into the office and you knew things may be challenging on the home front, but there was sort of work and there was home and you separated the two. And suddenly COVID collapsed everything together. In many respects, coming out of it, I feel closer to some of these people than I ever did. But boy, it was hard. And we, you know, we lost some people that really just felt like this is too hard. We held on to a lot more people than I think a lot of other people, which was great. And again, it goes back to having a deep culture bank account, if you will. But I hope that's the hardest thing I ever have to deal with. And it was just completely different than the economic crisis.
One of the challenges of COVID for law firms was that corporate lawyers were just working so hard because it was an extraordinarily active market. Is there any way you can manage overworking people?
It's challenging. I think the other thing that most law firms suffered during COVID was you had attrition, but you didn't necessarily replace. And because if people left the law world, they tended to not just, you know, a few people jumped for the money to go to other firms, but most people sort of got out of the law train, if you will. So your team shrunk a little bit, even though the work didn't. And I think the only way you can get through that is you have to go back to a complete team approach. And you have to, as the senior partner, jump in, both feet wet. You need me to mark this document up. It's a minor document. I don't care. I'll mark it up. If that's the best way to move the process forward, because you do have people stretched to the absolute limit. You can't exactly promise them, hey, there's four more people here waiting that are going to jump in to work on the transaction. So all you can do is just really dive in as a leader and roll up your sleeves and get in the middle of the transaction and work probably harder than you were expecting to work. But that, frankly, is what people respond to. The old style of the senior partner, you know, I'll go to the organizational call and then tell me when the closing dinner is and I'll show up for that. That's gone. I mean, if you're trying to do that in today's age, you're not going to be managing people for very long. people have to know that you're there for them, that you will jump in as need be. That's when you build that loyalty and the street cred, if you will, that I've been there, I've done that, and I'm willing to do it again because that's what this deal needs. That's the only way you can approach these things, because you can't promise them the relief corps is just around the corner, because there isn't a relief corps. And so you have to approach it as a true team. And if you're a real team, people have tough times and you cover for them when they're in a difficult stretch, then they recuperate and they jump back in and you move forward. That's the only way I know to do it, which is lead by example.
How do you think about the task of managing internally, which is what we've been talking about, and you know, the outward facing role you have as a group leader?
It's a challenge. There's a lot of internal stuff that you need to do to manage your team, but you can't lose sight of the fact that your team's only there because the work's there. And so a lot of my time is externally facing. I think what you do to be successful is you have to empower your team. You have to empower some of your younger partners to lead in your absence, and they can hopefully deal with some of the internal stuff that you need to deal with. And that while you are out there, hopefully, and part of my job is frankly getting in more work and mining the relationships that I have over 30 plus years in this industry. And then on the external side, it's also the same thing. You're trying to pull some of these younger folks along who may not certainly have the relationships that I have in this industry because I've been in it forever, but you're bringing them into your relationship so that I don't want to feel like I'm the only one bringing in the business for the group. I want the younger partners having that level of ownership. Like, this is my group. It's not David's group. This is our group. And so what you have to do is you have to put them in positions of leadership, whether it's managing the team or managing clients. Nobody wants to do one or the, you know, only one. Very few people want to just look inward, and very few people want to just look outward. They want to do both, because that's what I do, and it seems to have worked. And so I think the biggest way to manage both internally and externally is give support to your younger team and put them in positions of leadership as well, because they'll help you a lot in that regard.
And the REIT world is one where it seems that CEOs and senior management teams tend to be a little older, so that it's not like you're in tech, say, or biotech, where as a lawyer in her late 30s, early 40s, you can have your own relationships with the CEO who's running the company.
That's right. It is an industry that, when I was involved early, it seemed like a young industry, but people have stayed in this industry, that you haven't seen a lot of exits. A lot of different executives hop from industry to industry. Real estate tends to be fairly insular, and people may move from company to company, but they don't typically leave the space. And so you're right. I do have relationships with people that have, over the years, when I was a senior associate, I developed relationships with people who now run the real estate divisions at major investment banks, are CFO or CEO of public company REITs. And what I tell people is that's what you need to do as well. Eventually, there is succession, even in the real estate industry. And so even as a fifth or sixth year associate, you may not have daily conversations with the CEO of a client, but you do have daily conversations with the VP of asset management or the VP of investments or the VP of accounting. And the key there is to develop those relationships, because as you grow, and they may leave that company and go somewhere else, and you follow those relationships. And most of the people that I know now, I'm not the right model anymore. I've been at the same place my entire legal career. That doesn't typically happen. And so most of my relationships have hopped from company to company, but you build the relationships and then you get a new client. And so what I've told the younger partners and the senior associates particularly is figure out who you've worked with and stay close to them, because they're going to be successful and you can be successful with them. And long after I'm gone, I'm hopeful that this team will be strong because of the relationships that the rest of the team members have built.
You talked about the CEO who said that the Culture Bank was taking only withdrawals during COVID. How have you tried to ensure that the Culture Bank in your group is now getting a lot of deposits?
Nothing beats in-person interactions. We're in the middle of transitioning back to more regular time in the office. It's been slow. It's been slower than I would have thought, particularly where I'm based in Washington, D.C., because it's just, we still are having people a little reluctant to come back into the office on a regular basis. I think only in the past month have things really started to approach some level of normalcy of seeing people down the hall on a regular basis. And I think what you need to do is convince people there's a reason to be here. You can't push people to come into the office. You have to pull them in because there's something attractive about being in the office that makes them want to come in. Whether it's having team meetings a little bit more frequently than we used to have them, having more happy hours, more breakfast get-togethers. I think a lot of it, frankly, right now is more socially driven and reminding people, oh yeah, this is why I liked working here. I miss hanging out with these people because we each get in our own cocoon. You know, in COVID, we had to completely on a dime switch to working 100% remote and learning how to do that. And now we're switching back to this sort of hybrid model. Nobody's going to come back 5 days a week, but you do want people here most of the time. And the way to do that is to convince them that it was worth it to come in. There's nothing worse than somebody going through the pain and suffering of dealing with getting into the office and the commute and family issues and coming in and then saying, why in the heck am I here? What's the point? You know, nobody's here. That's a failure. So you have to pick your spots. You can't be a bully and say, everybody, you know, Elon Musk would not work in a law firm. You're here. And if you're not here, we assume you've quit. I mean, that just would never fly. Lawyers, by their nature, are independent creatures. Each of us have our own business. It's one of the challenges of, frankly, leading a law firm is it's not hierarchical. And so you've got to understand that your business model is different and you've got to adapt and figure out what works best for your people. There's no playbook for this. We're sort of figuring it out on the fly.
But it sounds like that's part of the job that you really enjoy.
It is. Sort of the fun is not having a playbook, I guess. You get some things wrong. I certainly have. You get some things right. You feel really good about it. It makes it interesting. As you get older, as you well know, people seem to think you have the answers more than you used to. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case. You just have a little bit more experience. You trust your instincts more as you get older, I think, about what you think will work and doesn't work. And the law firm environment is really different. I never imagined what it would be like leading a group of lawyers, particularly partners. You know, I'm not their boss. I am not the person, they don't report to me. So how do you lead a group like that? Well, a lot of it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's people skills. You know, being successful in the law, you can be the smartest lawyer in the world, but if you don't have really good people skills, either whether it's with clients or with your fellow lawyers at your firm, you're not going to be as successful as the next person. And so that's an area where I think that was probably one of my strengths coming into this job. I like people. I enjoy being around people. I think the job is fun. And I think you're right. Predictability, it'd probably get a little boring. And I might have said somewhere along the way, let's find something else to do to make it more interesting. That this job is always interesting. It's never boring.
And then finally, what do you do to decompress from the job?
That's the hardest thing for a lawyer. I used to have a real problem with that when I was younger. You know, I'd be on a vacation and I'd have a noon call with a client and I'd spend the whole morning thinking about the call. I'd have the call and then I'd spend the whole afternoon thinking about the call. I ruined the whole day for one-hour call when I was on vacation. You have to learn, I think, as a lawyer to compartmentalize. And It is not the kind of job where you get to send an email saying, you know, I'll be out of office for 2 weeks. I will not be checking emails and we'll call you when I get back. If you do that, you won't really have this job for very long. Clients will move on. So what I've learned to deal with it is I learned to take a lot of long weekends. I'm the king of the long weekend, if you will. I love travel. I haven't done enough of it. But like, for example, in the past 3 months, I had a meeting in Paris like Thursday and Friday, and I went to Florence for the weekend. In my old days, I would have flown back Friday as soon as I could and been back in the middle of the world, but I went to Florence for the weekend when I, that, and then another time I was in London for meetings and I went to Edinburgh for the weekend. So to me, that is very relaxing, taking that little break. As I've gotten older, I've learned how to compartmentalize from a travel standpoint. And then I guess you still have to do something fun. I still play baseball on the weekends. I'm probably one of the older guys on the team now, but you're playing baseball in a 30 and older baseball league. It's a lot of fun. I can't usually move on Mondays, but it reminds me that there's more to life than work. And it's a great group of guys. We've gone to Florida for baseball tournaments. That's really rewarding. They don't know me as a lawyer or anything like that, which is great. It's a completely different world and it's really enjoyable. So I find time for fun. I won't lie that I'm looking forward to the day when I'm done, when I can take that 2-week vacation and turn off completely. That's probably the, one of the very first things I'll do whenever I'm done. But you're trying to balance your professional obligations, but still enjoy your life so that you don't go crazy in this job. Because yeah, this job will eat up your life if you let it. I've seen too many people burn out, you know, by doing this 24/7. You do have to stop and have some fun and spend time with friends.
David, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to do it, David. Really appreciate you having me on and look forward to talking to you again soon, hopefully.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.